Welcome to the Wonders and Worries Parenting Podcast Series. I'm Ali Hushmand, marriage and family therapist.
And I'm Julie May, certified child life specialist, both of us supporting families here at Wonders and Worries. This episode and future ones are short conversations and guidance on parenting issues that come up with the families and children that we are so blessed to support.
Today's episode is on parenting styles. No, we're not talking about your fashion styles or level of coolness. I know some of us parents wish we could get help on this so our teenagers did not look at us like we are dinosaurs or weirdos. So at this point, you're probably wondering, what are parenting styles? Well, according to John Gottman, they are about four parenting styles, and we all fall within one or the other. They are dismissing, disapproving, laissez-faire, and emotion coaching parenting styles. Here's the funny part. I've been giving these classes for a while, and before parents come to the class, I ask them to take an assessment to determine what type of parents they are. We all want to be the greatest parents in the world. Julie, what type of parent do you think you are?
Well, you know, I feel like with my background and as a mom of four kids that, you know, I'm doing pretty good, I think. I think I'm holding the course.
I think you're probably thinking you are what John Gottman would call an emotion coaching parent.
On my good days, yes.
Well, you're not alone. Every single parent that has taken this class has come back with their assessment and showing that they're all emotion coaching parents. To which I have to say then we're done. You're not supposed to take the class because you're perfect. You don't need to take this class anymore because you're done.
Ali, are you saying I'm not perfect?
Far from it. I'm sorry to break it down to you like this, but neither am I. Parenting is really hard. None of us were given a handbook and say, here, if you follow these step by step, you'll be the perfect parent and your children will come out to be exactly the way you want them and perfect. Sometimes it's just learning every day as we go.
That makes sense. So we can just break this on down.
We could. Let's start. What is the parenting style that we all want to aspire to, you think?
I would say emotional coping. A parent that's aware and in tune and supportive.
Yeah. But most of us fall within all four of them. So I'm going to just quickly remind our parents listening what they are. Dismissing, disapproving, laissez-faire, and emotion coaching. Julie and I are going to spend some time now to kind of define to you what these parenting styles are, and as you're listening, try to figure out where you fall. Let us start with dismissing parents. We all have done it. That type of parent is often a parent that at one point or another completely ignores what the child is thinking or feeling. Have you ever done this, Julie?
Completely. I feel like, especially in situational environments where maybe it's not appropriate for my child to take up that much of my attention, or it's a quieter space and I need to be focused on what I'm doing, and I'm just very quick to disengage and kind of move through it.
I bet you when you're at the supermarket and your kid wants candies and they're throwing a tantrum, what do you say?
I say no.
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 And we don't have time nor the energy at that point to deal with the child's feelings or what they're trying to tell us. Well, that's kind of in essence what a dismissing parent is. They dismiss what the child is trying to say or what the child is feeling. And we all do it. You know, we're not perfect. It's extremely difficult to be a parent. We don't want our children to have negative emotions. And what we're trying to tell our children is stop crying or get over it. You know, this is not the right time to cry. Unfortunately, when we do that, when we are kind of that type of dismissing parent, What do you think is the message we're sending to our child?
I mean, just off the cuff, thinking that our kids aren't good enough. They don't deserve our time.
Exactly. And then also the other message that we send our children, we're very dismissing, is that I just want to be around you when you're only happy and you're not crying. And if you're crying or you're happy or angry, I don't want to be around you. Just go somewhere else and do it. And that feeling just kind of creates that sense of isolation for a child, not knowing who to turn to when they are not feeling good. This is where they need to go. They need to go to their parents. That's that safe, secure place that they need when they're not feeling good. So being dismissing minimizes what a child is trying to say or is feeling, especially when it comes to negative emotions.
Just kind of sticking that band-aid on and saying you're fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So imagine when a child falls off the bicycle and they're crying, and we tell them, no, come on, you can do it, get up and let's go. Instead of kind of connecting with them at that point and kind of meeting them where they are, which it sucks. It probably hurts.
I can definitely look at my parenting and see moments where I've been very quick to dismiss.
Same here. All right. So that was for dismissing parenting style. How about disapproving parents? Sounds very similar to dismissing, actually. They're actually quite similar in the way they work when we do it. But there's a little additional thing that happens with disapproving parents is that we tend to criticize our children. Do you have any instances that you can remember?
Well, I live with a 13-year-old girl.
Uh-huh.
So I can definitely pull from moments where it's just her behavior is not representative of our beliefs as a family system, or her language is disrespectful, and I'm very quick sometimes to point out that versus focusing on the emotion behind the reason why she's acting that way.
Exactly, and that's very much like a disciplinarian as a parent. You're very, you know, there are strict boundaries, there are strict structures, there are certain ways we do it in our house, or there are certain values, and we're not going to budge or move from those values or the type of discipline that you want to pretty much impose on the children. And one of the things that we have to be very careful is that we tend to think in those moments that our children are actually trying to manipulate the situation to get what they want, because we are inflexible in terms of our position.
And I think sometimes as a parent, I sometimes put my child and I on an equal developmental playing field. And I need to remind myself that manipulation is not there in the sense that I'm foreseeing it, because we're not on the same level. This is them processing it at their developmental stance.
Exactly. And then sometimes we need to be the flexible ones, right? There's an old formula I share with all my parents, is that I plus I equals E. Can you guess what that is?
Not a clue.
Well, inflexible plus inflexible equals explosion. And that's what usually happens. If your child is inflexible and you are inflexible, well, the outcome is not going to be pretty.
Everybody, our case, the apples sometimes don't fall very far from the tree.
Exactly. So our role as parents is to do what? To take these opportunities to teach our children to be more flexible by modeling that for them. You know, there's a very important aspect that we need to bring up, which we call transgenerational patterns. You know, often I tend to think and go, oh my God, I just did the exact same thing that my dad or my mom used to do with me, and I really didn't like it. And yet here I am doing the same thing with my child.
Or walking away from a conversation and thinking, ooh, that didn't go very well.
Exactly. So we need to really focus at that point to recognize and be aware that maybe we didn't do it the way we needed to, and come back and repair with our children and model for them that things can change, that we're not inflexible, that it is important for us to sometimes admit that maybe we were in the wrong, and then we need to ask for forgiveness, and then be able to change the situation so the child feels a lot more connected and trusting with us in terms of their parents. Now, this was for disapproving parent. Well, guess this is my favorite one. This is one of the ones that we see actually quite often.
And I think it's your favorite because you say it pretty amazingly too.
Yes, because French is my first language. So I'll let you say it actually.
Laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire, if you want, but it's actually laissez-faire.
Of course it is.
Exactly. You know, laissez-faire in French means let it happen, basically, mm-hmm. meaning let it be. Do not get involved. It'll just pass. It needs to happen on its own. And that type of parenting, often what happens is parents believe that, oh my God, I'm one of the greatest parents on the planet because I'm giving all this freedom to my child. I'm not judging them. I'm not criticizing them. I'm letting them make all their decisions. Guess what is happening, actually?
They're being thrown into chaos.
Absolutely. What you're creating is chaos. Because a five-year-old sometimes cannot make decisions that a 25-year-old needs to make. They're going to decide or make a choice as a five-year-old. And if we decide to let it happen, well, often it's not going to go very well. There's really, from a child perspective, when it comes to laissez-faire parenting, there is a very good connection with the parents because there is not that disciplinarian type of parent or judgmental or critical. However, what happens is they have no sense of direction.
And I feel like, and I could be wrong in saying this, but I feel like my generation of parents who were raised by parents who were post-depression families, very structured and rule-based military families, to then parent from that, I tend to go the opposite direction and want to have less rules, less structure. And what I'm hearing is that that structure is actually supportive of their need to feel comfortable and secure.
Yeah, that's something we tend to forget. And especially, you know, talking about our Wonders and Worries families dealing with serious illnesses, chronic illnesses, and sometimes terminal illnesses, is that guilt that happens that children are already struggling because of a parent's illness, that we do not provide the boundary structure and sometimes the routine that they really crave. I mean, children love routine because when there is a routine, there is no anxiety because they know what to expect and they crave it.
Well, it is interesting. My husband and I went out of town last year for like the first time in a long time and had fantastic help from a grandparent, but very unstructured in how the approach was to parenting. And so simple changes to bedtime routines and the way they got ready for school in the morning and what was in their lunches really kind of threw them into this disarray and inability to kind of feel comfortable in their space. We got a lot of tearful phone calls,
mm-hmm.
all thrown in just kind of from these moments of feeling chaotic.
Exactly, because there's very little guidance when it comes to laissez-faire parenting. You know, one of the advantages of it is that the children feel very connected and trusting of the parents, but they're not getting the feedback that they need from their mom or their dad or and both, actually, in terms of, you know, what is sometimes necessary to do or expected or things that are helpful to them so that chaos doesn't happen.
And giving them a healthy boundary.
So I'm going to give you another chance to say the word laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire.
Very well said. Ooh. I love it. You're half French already. All right. Now we get to to that last part, which is what Gottman calls emotion coaching parents, which is basically what we all aspire to become. And I want all parents to know that it's just an aspiration. It's work. It doesn't come easily. You know, we all want to be better at parenting, and it's a process. It's not just, you know, from 0 to 100. It happens naturally. It is something that takes time, takes effort, and you both parents or need to work on it, or as a single parent, it's even sometimes harder because you need to be both parents at times. So emotion coaching is a little bit of a different approach when it comes to parenting, meaning that parents in that position are not in the role of telling their children what to think or what to feel. They let their children be more open about what they're experiencing, and they collaborate with their parents in terms of whatever the outcome they want the outcome to be.
That makes sense.
It's more of a coach, but I really definitely, and I know we are in Texas, I just definitely want to make sure that people understand I'm not talking about a football coach screaming on the sideline and telling everybody what to do, and it's my way or the highway. That's not that type of coaching
that
we're talking about here.
What?
Yes. And the part of the emotion coaching parent is that sense of collaboration, the bond, the trust that exists between the parent and the child or the children, is that parents truly respect and understand, and the key word here is empathize, with their children's emotions and thoughts, and put themselves at times in their shoes and see the world through their eyes. And from that perspective, then they can collaborate with their children on how to maybe find a solution to a problem that the child cannot figure out at times.
So Allie has a question. So maybe I'm not perfect after all. And in my earlier parenting days, when I was younger and tired and I had more stresses with our finances or kind of developing those roles of co-parenting and what that looked like in my family unit, I may not have been at a point to be an emotional coach. So now that I'm older, I do have older children, and I'm trying to move into that role, how do I repair the damage? Is there damage that's been done?
So that is a great question. That is something that a lot of parents experience, meaning that, did I permanently damage my child? Are they going to be traumatized for the rest of their life? And the reality of it is that, no, you have not.
It's not too late.
It's not too late. I don't like to use the words always and never, but in this case, I would say it's never too late to repair or change. Children adapt and cope wonderfully. We tend to sometimes forget how resilient they are. And if we provide them the atmosphere, the environment where we can kind of nurture and build that resiliency through the relationship that we have with our children, there is no damage.
That's so comforting.
I mean, you know, we all make mistakes as parents. We sometimes say the wrong things, do the wrong thing. What an emotion coach parent does is that they are aware of it, and once it happens, even if it's several days after, or a couple days, or several hours after, they can come back, sit down with their child or their children, and actually talk about it and kind of figure out how they can repair that.
So are there some fail-proof methods or systems that I can do as a parent to help me get to the level of being an emotional coach parent?
Yeah, there's actually a model that you can follow, and it's a bit difficult in a podcast to really explain it, but if you really want to think of it, is in terms of as a parent, when you're interacting with a child, there is a process that happens. Like you and I are talking here, we're talking into a microphone, but we're very much attuned in terms of our body language, our tone of voice. I'm looking at your face. You're smiling. You're looking at me. We're kind of giving each other signs as to who's going to talk now or next. So that attunement that exists, that's something that you want to create with your child when you're interacting with them. And the model that can be used is, for example, when you engage in a conversation with your child or interaction with them, is first thing first, which is listen. You know, that's something as parents we tend to forget. We love to lecture, but we forget to listen. And there's a difference between listening and hearing. I hear you, but I might not be really listening to you.
So we need to listen to understand.
Yes. Yeah. One of the things that I tell parents is the nose in front of the toes, meaning that you're facing your child with your toes and your nose when you're talking to them.
I like that.
So, you know, we're not on the phone or turning our back while they're talking to us or interacting with us. So the first thing is truly listen to them. The second part is when you're listening to them, put away all those things that are on your mind and what you want to tell them, but really understand where they are coming from, meaning attune yourself to them and empathize with them. See the world through their eyes, whatever they're explaining to you or sharing with you. So empathize is the next one. If we're talking about emotion, label that emotion with them. You know, I can tell you're really angry, or I can tell you're really upset, or you're sad. And just that validation is tremendous for a child to know that, wow, mom and dad really understand where I'm coming from.
And are those, would you look at that as kind of a conversation continuing cue? Just that feeding in the, it sounds to me like you are frustrated.
Exactly. So because once you say that, then more often than not, they say, yes, I am frustrated, or yes, I am upset because, and then they'll start all over again and they share what is really, you know, triggering their behavior or what made them upset. And then again, you're listening as they're saying all that to you. And then you engage with them at some, you know, level of collaboration and guidance in terms of what they want to do with that emotion or what they need to do different in terms of their behavior. So at this point, after you have listened and empathized and validated what they're saying, then you can maybe ask them an open-ended question. Children usually don't like questions. They try to give you the shortest answer possible. So if you ask them, how you feel today? How was your day at school? Do you have a lot of homework? Are you tired? Well, you're going to get monosyllabic answers, which are yes, no, whatever.
Nothing.
Or nothing, right? But if you ask them an open-ended question, say, I can really tell that you are frustrated. What would you like to do differently? What would help you right now? And then just asking that open-ended question engages a different part of the brain. It engages the frontal cortex, basically, versus the limbic system, which is that emotional part of the brain. And when they engage the other part of the brain, the other one starts to slow down. So you will often see their eyes kind of go up because they're thinking. They're almost looking at the top of their brain, trying to think what to say. That by itself can slow things down so that if they're in a very strong emotional state, they can connect and share what's going on. And then maybe say, well, next time I would like to try this. And then they offer a solution. And as an emotional coach parent, do we accept the solution they give us?
Yeah.
A dismissing or a disapproving parent would probably say, no, this is not the way we do it. Here's what you want to do, or you listen because I know best. An emotion coach parent will probably say, okay, well, why don't we give it a try and see what happens? It might work or it might not work, but the beauty of it is you have empowered your child to come up with their own solution. And if it works, wonderful. Now they feel much better. That's self-esteem, self-confidence. And if it doesn't work, then guess what we do?
Start over.
Start over. And we come back and we teach them actually to problem solve. But we're doing it together. They're not alone. Like we said at Wonders and Worries, we do things together. We laugh together. We cry together. We learn together. Does that make sense?
That makes great sense.
Perfect. So I just wanted to close this first podcast with Julie, just reminding you that today we reviewed the four parenting styles, and just to remind you that the first one was dismissing, disapproving, laissez-faire, and the last one, emotion coaching. I hope that this conversation on parenting style gave you some insight into your own parenting and changes you could make to improve your relationship with your children.
We invite you to join us again on our next podcast as we talk about healthier ways to connect with your children and support them in expressing thoughts and emotions and feelings.
This is Ali Hushman.
And I'm Julie May. We will learn together.